Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Burda, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, April 23rd. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services last week released the list of the first companies to volunteer to participate in CMS's much-anticipated ACCESS payment model. ACCESS stands for Advancing Chronic Care with Effective, Scalable Solutions. The goal of the new model is to promote the use of digital health technology to help Medicare beneficiaries and their providers manage the beneficiaries' chronic medical conditions. The list released last week contains the names of more than 150 companies that CMS has accepted into the program. The names include many consumer-facing digital health companies that will sound familiar, but that CMS acknowledges have not previously targeted Medicare patients. CMS also extended the ACCESS application deadline to May 15th. That's like saying good seats are still available. CMS launches the program on July 5th, and it's planned to run for 10 years. We talked about what it will take to make the ACCESS program a success on our December 11th, 2025 episode of the Roundup, Connecting Digital Health and Health Outcomes with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Please listen to the special rebroadcast of our December 11th, 2025 episode, Connecting Digital Health and Health Outcomes. The question is, how much of a gift is Medicare's new ACCESS value-based payment model? And that's what we're going to talk about on today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. All right, let's talk about whether the industry is going to return this gift from CMS or quietly complain about it for years. It's called the ACCESS model. ACCESS stands for Advancing Chronic Care with Effective, Scalable Solutions. The 10-year program is voluntary. It's scheduled to start on July 1st next year. The model will pay participating Medicare Part B providers, that's doctors and medical practices, what CMS calls recurring outcome-aligned payments, or OAPs, for providing tech-enabled care to beneficiaries with traditional Medicare coverage to manage four chronic medical conditions. The four conditions are early cardio-kidney metabolic conditions like high blood pressure or cholesterol, cardio-kidney metabolic conditions like diabetes or heart disease, musculoskeletal conditions like chronic muscle or joint pain, and behavioral health conditions like depression or anxiety. Full payment will be, quote, tied to achieving measurable outcomes, close quote. And CMS will encourage participating providers to use technology like telehealth and wearable devices to achieve those measurable outcomes. One goal of the new model is to, quote, expand clinicians' ability to offer innovative technology-enabled care through a straightforward payment pathway, close quote. There's a lot more, but we only have 20 minutes. Dave, you like technology. You like paying for outcomes. Do you like this new payment model? Why or why not?
You know, I love it. For as much as I abhor almost everything the Trump administration is doing, Dr. Oz and his team at CMS keep hitting the ball out of the park. ACCESS is just the latest example of a great health policy. As you both know, I've been critical of CMMI for throwing way too much pilot spaghetti against the wall to see what would stick. Way too many models, never big enough, never long enough to fully engage real participation and meaningful change. No wonder almost all the pilots up to this point have failed. ACCESS is not pilot spaghetti. And let me tell you why. All kinds of reasons. One, it's long. It's 10 years, more than enough time to prove the concept. If it ultimately saves dollars, which I believe it will, the program can become permanent. Two, it's voluntary with a payment code. This will engage meaningful participation. Usually I like, as in the Maryland waiver program, mandatory participation. The payment code will make all the difference. People will flock to this program. Three, it's simple and easy to understand, something both Zeke Emanuel and Mike Chernow, the MedPAC chair, have been harping about continuously. This is not hard to understand. It's inclusive. It has the support of almost 20 clinical associations, patient societies, and payers. They've also collaborated with Andy Slavitt's VC firm, Town Hall Ventures, on creation of the model. Did someone say bipartisan? It's outcomes-based, Dave, and you're right. Outcomes are everything. I love outcomes-based as opposed to process-based payment models. No confusion between correlation and causation. If you deliver the goods, you get the payment. There's a reason, as you know, Dave, the first line in the Foresight Health mantra is outcomes matter, right? Outcomes do matter. It's open source. One might even say market-driven. It's taking applications for participation beginning on January 12th. The program will launch in July. They're going to get a lot of good ideas. I'm very curious to see what the ultimate pilot contains in terms of incentives, contours, as they move it into the marketplace. It's an ecosystem. The FDA is simultaneously launching the Tempo initiative for health tech devices. Have we ever seen this type of interagency collaboration within HHS before? Pretty impressive. Together, these programs will support decentralized and hybrid care delivery models. You both, I think, will remember 3DWPH from the coming healthcare revolution. That stands for decentralized and democratized delivery, 3D, of whole person health. That's the disruptive innovation Paul and I believe will fundamentally disrupt and transform the U.S. healthcare system. This supports 3DWPH. It will be iterative in nature, I believe, and adjusted and probably expanded over time. Right now, it's just seniors, but when you look at the chronic disease afflicting the country, we have to go after younger populations as well. I see nothing really not to like as Access and Tempo are rolling out. The devil will ultimately be in the details, and execution is paramount, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt. The design is great. And since I mentioned the coming healthcare revolution, when don't I, right? But Paul and I came up with our Star Wars-like acronym, CB2E2, to evaluate healthcare companies and policies. So let's try it out here. First C, cheaper. Honestly, if we can diagnose and manage chronic disease earlier and better, we're going to save a bunch of money. The rest of the world has already proved this to us. Is it better? Attacking chronic conditions much earlier and aggressively works, as I said earlier. We know this from both our own experience and what other countries do. Balanced, is it balanced between health and healthcare? It's all about prevention and chronic disease management. It's where we need to be putting more resources, not fewer. This does that. Is it easy? I've already mentioned that. And again, the devil will be in the details and execution is paramount. But the initial design is elegant. You might remember the Einstein quote, things need to be as simple as possible, but not simpler. This seems to me to strike that balance. Again, we'll see exactly how they roll it out, but I think it's simple enough. And empowering, the second E, for both caregivers and consumers. Here again, just hits the ball out of the park. It gives both caregivers and consumers tools to manage their own health. So on the CB2E2, they're 5 for 5. So give Access and Tempo 5 stars. Let's see how it goes.
I think I figured out why you like it so much, Dave. It's a great acronym.
It is a good acronym.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, there was no way you weren't going to like it. Plus, the FDA has Tempo, which I forget what that stands for. So you got two great acronyms there.
And who doesn't like Tempo and Access, right?
Right. Brilliant. Right. Two positive raises. That's great. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, I share your excitement, but I have heard all sorts of criticisms this week. Now, criticisms included things like, well, the seniors, why is this going to work for our seniors? Or attribution, how are we going to attribute where who's responsible for what here? Or they're going to cherry pick. A lot of naysayers. So the one key thing I keep thinking about is this concept of attribution. Do you worry about this, or do you think the physician relationship nullifies that concern? Where do you stand on that?
In life, where there's a will, there's a way. In healthcare, where there's a code, there's a way. That means the program needs to run ultimately through providers, which I think will mitigate some of that concern. What gives me even more comfort and alleviates much of, I think, the rational concerns regarding cherry picking and gaming is the outcomes-based payment. We got to see exactly how they administer that. But if you lower your blood pressure and kind of address some of these other chronic conditions, the doctor gets a payment. Shouldn't we be paying more for actually improving health? Plus, bigger picture, half of Americans are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. I mean, this is a national crisis. These programs, Access and Tempo, go right at the heart of the chronic disease pandemic attacking our national vitality. It's hard to cherry pick when at least half the people in the country need the service.
I think everybody's got at least one of those four conditions. Thanks, Dave. Julie, you're the one who brought up the new model on last week's show. Be careful what you wish for. Is this good news or bad news for healthcare tech companies, and why? And who do you see benefiting most from the new model?
I mean, this is great news for those companies that qualify. Although going first in a major program like this, maybe more than they wish for, that's for sure. I've already had one national health plan express concern, excitement, of course, but concern that one of their vendors who would absolutely be eligible might get distracted by this and take their eye off that health plan ball. So, you know, the market's watching for sure. And there's a trust issue happening all over the place with these companies. So listen, I'd be super excited if I were at Omada or Virta or Vita or Monogram or any host of cardiometabolic companies in the CKD space. If they can improve or control blood pressure, A1C, lipids, weight, across a whole host of dimensions, you know, devices, coaching, medication titration, diagnostics, like companies like this, not so sure they're all there right now. Most of them are or should be and just need to figure out how to demonstrate it. They should be super psyched. You'll see MSK companies like Sword, Unbias, Arvori, especially companies like this because their models are deeply clinical, more so than some others. And these companies use validated patient-reported outcomes measures like function and pain intensity, and they have longitudinal support, so they should absolutely be able to do what Access lays out and be super excited about it. And then let's talk about that last category of behavioral health. It could be huge. I mean, you're going to see countless companies in this category that are focused on depression, anxiety, mostly low acuity, and those that are measuring with PHQ-9s and GAD-7s and some of the standards that are already out there with some clinician oversight. Companies like Grow Therapy, again, I'm biased, LifeStance, ThriveWorks, Valera, Talkspace, Talkiatry. I mean, the list will be long in the behavioral health space. So I think there's a lot of companies out there that if they can't quite do exactly what Access is asking for today, they are figuring it out right now because they're just a turn away from it. And, you know, these companies that are in some way physician-led or with some physician oversight can enroll in, you know, Medicare as a digital or hybrid provider and can consistently deliver and document these outcomes at scale. And they have to be, you know, outcomes that align with CMS guidelines, of course, but they will be lining up and ready to go, especially those, well, this is where I think, you know, part of the issue will come in. They need to have some interoperability capabilities. I'm not so sure all do today, but they'll be focused on that. Integration with PPs will be, you know, incredibly helpful. If they have rural reach, that's huge. And the ability to just simplify, you know, patient access, patient costs, that's going to be huge. I also think if you look at some of the indirect beneficiaries who won't receive money directly, but should start to see more tools fly off the shelves. Think about vendors that create the blood pressure cuffs or the CGMs, the devices that are used by a lot of these companies. You know, they will benefit for sure. And there's probably a lot of those out there, especially as more of these companies get into monitoring. So that's huge. Now, Alternatively, I think you are SOL. Dave, is that an appropriate term for a podcast? Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's nothing.
You are SOL if your app only digital therapeutic vendor that doesn't have some sort of physician, you know, clinical director oversight, or your point solution that can't measure and report, you know, outcomes that align with these guidelines. This is going to separate the wheat from the chaff in terms of a lot of the digital technology companies in healthcare. And I personally am thrilled to see it, like Dave. I do listen to all my naysayers because there are people who are deep, deep, deep in, you know, health informatics and understanding, you know, how these things roll in a traditional world. And what's interesting about this is I don't know that these guys at CMS think about it in a traditional way. So it really might be a new chapter.
It's all about the data and the outcomes. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
A frequent economic critique of these types of preventive payment models is that in aggregate, they lead to more disease discovery and higher cost. Do you think there's any validity to this critique?
There is definitely validity to that critique, but theoretically, you know, you would think that if we can identify, we can actually treat in a way that leverages some of these tools or treats earlier and hence doesn't cost as much. That, of course, is the goal. Will that be the way it happens in practice? I think it's going to be pretty lumpy. I don't think the cost management side of this is clear, but it will expand the pool of managers. And we'll see if the promise of digital health can pull through in the end. I mean, we have 10 years.
Yeah.
And I've got at least three of those four chronic conditions. If Medicare wants to pay my doctors more to use technology to manage my problems, I'm all for it. Now, whether that technology moves the needle on my health outcomes is another story. Technology has a tendency to increase my blood pressure, not lower it, when it doesn't work. So we'll see. Okay, we're back to April 23rd, and I'm still here. I hope you are too. And I hope you enjoyed this special rebroadcast of our December 11th, 2025 episode, Connecting Digital Health and Health Outcomes. I know I did. And that is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to The Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.